My name is Harrison Wheeler, and this is the Technically Speaking Podcast. I sit down with BIPOC designers, entrepreneurs, and technologists. We discuss careers, triumphs, their resilience, and the why behind their decisions. Before we get started with the show, I just wanted to plug our Patreon. If you like what you're listening to and you want to support the podcast, for as low as $3, you can contribute monthly to help support the production of the show. You can contribute today by heading over to patreon.com/technicallyspeakinghw. I'll also include the link in the show notes. Now, let's get into the show. In this episode, I interview Arlen Hamilton, founder of Backstage Capital and the author of her latest book, Your First Million. We discuss her journey as an entrepreneur and investor. With sheer determination and an inspirational voice, Arlen Hamilton breaks the mold, redefining success in entrepreneurship and investing. In my conversation with Arlen, she shares valuable lessons from her trailblazing journey as founder of Backstage Capital, a venture capital fund rooting for underrepresented founders. She provides a poignant look into her life, motivations, strategies, shining a light on the keystones of her philosophy and stirring the entrepreneurial spirit.
I've always had dreams. When I was 13, I dreamed of working on the road and live concert touring, and I ended up doing that after a decade for me to get there. I dreamed of being wealthy. I dreamed of something. And so you chase that, right? I chase it.
Yeah.
When it came to Backstage Capital and the idea of investing in underrepresented, underestimated founders who were receiving less than 10% of all venture funding, even though we make up way more than 50% of the population when you count women across the board, BIPOC, LGBTQ across the board. When it came to that, it was more of a calling. I understood it. Like once I understood, and when you have something that you consider a calling, it's pulling you forward.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Right.
Pulling at you. And so that was the lesson. That was the moment. It's all. There's no question here.
Our guest is Arlen Hamilton, and she's a trailblazing entrepreneur and investor, and she's nothing short of inspirational. She's founded Backstage Capital, that's invested in over 200 companies led by underrepresented founders, is the author of It's About Damn Time, and most recently, Your First Million, which shares the same name as your podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is like a circular moment, because I think I was a part of your crowdfunding campaign several years ago.
Amazing.
And we've actually invested in the same company before, which is pretty
cool. Can you say one?
Yeah. So do you remember Erica Harrison and Edlift?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. We had a short moment where we had an overlap at LinkedIn together. And she was actually one of my first guests in the first season. I think she was like episode 9. So shout out to Erica. And I know you've been really busy on the tour. I think before we started recording, I just thank you so much. Because I think in your book, you said, I think when you're traveling 300 days out of 365, I'm sure it hasn't slowed down for you.
Yeah, I'm on the road right now on the book tour. And yeah, it's a journey. But I only do what I want to do.
Yeah.
These days, I've figured out those boundaries. And so don't feel sorry for me. You're doing what I want to do and getting sick every once in a while.
We hope you feel better as soon as possible, because it really makes you appreciate when you're up to full health, right?
So true. So true.
All right. So I wanted to begin the show with a few icebreakers. And so the first one, I love to ask like all my guests, and it doesn't have to do anything with work or what you're doing, but what's something that you're currently obsessed with right now?
It's going to be old news to some people, but maybe new to a lot of people. General Hospital. It's my favorite television show, so I watch it a lot. You know what else I've been binging has been The Equalizer, Queen Latifah show.
The Queen Latifah one. Okay.
Oh, it's so good. And I obviously love the movies with Denzel, because this is a different vibe, completely different vibe, but has some of the same aspects to it. And she's just so good. And I got to meet her, actually go on the set of The Equalizer a few weeks ago and meet her. And I don't think I've met a more charismatic person in my life. Just incredibly, that's the word that everybody I was with, my family that's the word we walked out with. Like, how is somebody that charismatic? And so, yeah, I've been binging The Equalizer. I've been definitely binging General Hospital, but for
death. Yeah. Yeah. Do they still make, they don't make General Hospital anymore, right?
General Hospital. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Every weekday on ABC, they make, they watch.
Oh, you got the schedule down.
I watch it every day.
Do you record it, pre-record it?
So it airs on Hulu after. Yeah. And so what I'll do is I'll catch up on 3 to 4 days at a time. Yeah. If I'm, because at home, when I'm at home, I like to take Saturdays off completely. And I'll just sit there and watch the whole week course.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know all the characters. I've met several of, actually at a book stop in LA, three of the actors were there. Because I invited them. I'm invested in.
You have such a connection.
I have such the end game for me with that, that I want to actually appear on the show because I'm going to tell you something you probably don't know.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you know Stephen A. Smith?
Who doesn't know Stephen A. Smith?
He has been on General Hospital for 8 years. Yeah.
I've never known this.
Can I tell you his name on the show?
What's his name?
Brick.
Brick. Is this like his, you know how people have alter egos?
Yeah, maybe. He plays a very savvy tech person for a mobster.
Oh.
And so he's the mobster's surveillance and tech person. Oh, not so much tech, but surveillance person.
Yeah.
And it started off because he said this is long about General Hospital, but that's, you know, your show. He said that he grew up in a house full of girls and women.
Yeah.
They watched the show as he was growing up and he started getting interested in it.
Yeah.
And then one of the main guys who's been in there for more than 30 years, Maurice Bernard, is an actor named Sonny, who's the mobster he works for. Mm. He is a big sports fan. So he's a big fan of his. And they connected. He went on his show. And then next thing you know, Brick shows up to Port Charles, which is the city that they live
in. Oh,
and he's the guy.
This reminds me of, you know how you see these pictures with people and you're like, that is an unlikely group of people? Yeah. It definitely feels like that.
Yeah, that's my end game is I want a Stephen A. Smith-esque role on General Hospital where I come in a few weeks a year and have this great role. And I've been working on it.
Oh, man, you're going to make it happen.
People think I'm kidding, but I am not.
The thing about if you haven't read any of Arlen's books or follow her on social media, you will find that anything that she puts her mind to, she will achieve it.
That for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of that, is there anything? So you've had a ton of accomplishments. You're still going, right? Is there anything that like surprises you about yourself or what was like most recently that really surprised you about yourself that you just never expected?
I don't know if it's both those things at once, but it's not that I never expected it, but it did surprise me, right? It's the fact that I can still bounce back. I have these two books and I poured my heart out into writing them. And then on top of that, talk about them constantly and the promotion of them. It's a lot of it's like, you remember when that thing happened back then at the airport and all these things. But what most people don't realize is that a lot of that still happens. A lot of those major things still happen on a monthly basis where you're knocked out and entrepreneurs know what I'm talking about. And you know what I'm talking about. And it has surprised me recently when I've had things like really high stakes things fall through that I'm following my own advice and that I'm doing what I say, I'm saying, you know, what I'm doing. So I'm happy about that. And it's like a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's surprising because obviously you talk about it to some degree, but it's like you have your own principled approach to things it's tried and true and it applies in different scenarios and you never really lose yourself in that.
No. Yeah. There's no, I guess the surprise just comes from like the strength that is needed sometimes and the fact that I have it. These are bigger and bigger stakes. Therefore, I've never been in this terrain before.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that it stands here too.
Yeah.
It's not just when I have nothing to lose.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. It's a superpower. It's not like a reactionary kind of thing anymore. So I wanted to move on to focus a bit on your book called your first million. Look, I'm going to be real. I've read like a ton of books on business and investing and management. And I think even like right now, I think industry-wide, we're going through a bit of a transformation in terms of just what our focus, what the focus is, right? COVID has changed so many things in terms of how we work. There's a huge focus on AI. I think we're seeing even larger economic disparity for Black folks in this country. And we even see that reflected in terms of the workforce as well. And so I think like this book couldn't have been more timely and reaffirming, in my opinion, for me. And I think part of it was just how accessible and approachable and relatable. These weren't terms and concepts or ideas where I think in the past, it's felt like when I've walked in some of these situations, it's, oh, he didn't use the right jargon, therefore he doesn't know. Or I know you've been through that situation before. And I wonder, so my first question is, what is the motivation around writing the book? And I think specifically, why now?
Yeah, the first book, It's About Damn Time, is more of a memoir / motivational, with hopefully some information, great information for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But I really didn't want to just make another version of that with the second book. I didn't do this just for nothing. It's definitely a very intentional path to become an author. And I think you become an author in your first book, but I love that you can have a career as an author, starting with your second.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, I had been working on Backstage at that point for almost 10 years. And I had been, I'd interviewed through my podcast hundreds of millionaires and a couple of billionaires. Yeah. I had worked with hundreds of millionaires and a couple of billionaires, and I had become a millionaire.
Yeah.
Right. All through that, what I understood was, oh, this can be taught. All there are lessons to learn here. And so I wanted to get that into that kind of guidebook into the hands of people as quickly as possible, rather than wait to book three or four when I was older and maybe wiser. I want to say this is like, even with It's About Damn Time, I thought, why do I write this now? And it's because I want to be able to look back.
Right.
And I also wanted to have a book that I was looking for 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So Your First Million didn't exist to me. There were multiple versions of it, but they were all written by white men.
Yeah.
And so I could read them and I could understand them. Like, I love Richard Branson's books.
Right.
Loved his books. But every few pages, I was reminded, oh, this isn't necessarily for me. I would take what I needed to take and learn from that. But I thought, if I can have three or four really substantial books in my lifetime, I will be thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's an interesting theme there around, again, like the timing. And you can probably, I don't know if you've gone through this, but I feel like when I started the podcast, I used to do this thing with like batch recording. Mm-hmm. When I started out, I'd get like 10 guests on. I'd be like, you know what? I've got the next, and I release it every other week. I have 20 weeks of content. I can just sit back and chill. But I think there's something around, so much can change in such a short period of time. And I think the part that I appreciate about this is like, just how actionable, like the frameworks that you have there. And I think like, for me, again, like when it came to the affirmation piece, it's, I've been thinking about these things to some degree, but I didn't have anybody else to talk to about it. And so in many ways, it really did feel like having a mentor of just going through this in ways that were very practical. I think you mentioned kind of something that I've always been familiar with observing, right? It's these three scenarios. It's number one, you can be pissed and give up. Two, you can learn as much as you can, sit quietly so you don't get kicked out and conform to the rules. And then the third was either say, you know what, forget both of these things, I'm going to start my own. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the first two like firsthand so many times. I think to some degree, I've probably been through it myself.
Yeah.
And I'm super curious for you, from your experience, I know you've talked to so many different people, like what gets people over that edge to take that leap or that risk? Or what are some of the pieces of advice you give them to propel them to take that investment on themselves?
I think the most helpful for me in my experience has just been it being about more than me. Anytime something didn't seem like it was clicking or I didn't have enough fuel for it, it usually was only going to benefit me if it worked out. And that's not to say don't take care of yourself, because I'm all about taking care of yourself. You don't owe anyone anything for the most part, right? We owe them dignity and respect, but you don't owe anytime I've needed like a jet pack added to my back.
Yeah.
It's been that somebody else would benefit.
Yeah.
Pull this off.
Yeah.
Anytime I have downs, that's it. And it got me started with Backstage. I would have quit years ago if it was just about me being rich or famous or whatever the thing ends up being, the outcome, the ROI comes out to be, because it's just been such a tough road. But every single day, it's reinforced why I'm doing this. So if you can find a why that is outside of you yourself, I think that is a hack. It's a direct hack.
Was that something that, what got you to that point? Was that something that you'd always believed in, or love to understand that journey?
No. So that, how I compare it is like, I've always had dreams. When I was 13, I dreamed of working on the road and live concert touring. And I ended up doing that after a decade for me to get there. I dreamed of being wealthy. I dreamed of something. And so you chase that, right? I chase it.
Yeah.
When it came to Backstage Capital and the idea of investing in underrepresented, underestimated founders who were receiving less than 10% of all venture funding, even though we make up way more than 50% of the population, when you count women across the board, BIPOC, LGBTQ across the board. When it came to that, it was more of a calling. I understood it. Like once I understood, and when you have something that you consider a calling, it's pulling you forward.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Right.
It's pulling at you. And so that was the lesson. That was the moment. It's all. There's no question here.
Right.
And again, it goes back to, who else is it affecting if it plays out? Because you're like, when you're hungry and worried and stressed and you don't know, truly don't know where you're going to sleep the next day or how you're going to have food. And I also was dealing with an alcohol addiction that was running my life as well. When you have all that going on, easiest thing to do is quit.
Right.
But I just kept imagining, okay, what if you can pull this off though? And hey, look at what I did. I actually have a fund and actually invested in more than 200 companies led by underrepresented, underestimated founders. And couldn't have known that was going to happen. But I said, if I can get anywhere close to this, if I can get a fraction of this, what I actually have done, it'll mean something to somebody.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And I actually still think that's the case. I still think that my job was to set the foundation. And I hope that the next, or to pass the baton, I think there's a lot more, so much more that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Next, and with somebody, so other people taking the baton.
I think the piece that really stands out for me, and the word that I keep hearing a lot, is around the energy, right? And understanding that the work that you're doing is bigger and greater than you. And so you mentioned being homeless, mentioned battling alcoholism, going from concert, and I know how crazy that is. I used to have a concert production company. Like, there's not a lot of great influence around that. And I imagine you do all this work and then you get into the VC space. You're starting to see really how difficult it is, right? So you have this dream, you have this idea, but yet you still have way many more roadblocks. I'm curious as to how you were able to persist beyond that, right? You alluded to this earlier. It's like you could either give up, you could either conform. But what was the first moment where you were like, you know what, this is going to work?
Oh, I don't know. I think the first time I got an investment after three and a half years of just getting absolutely nowhere on investment. My first $50,000, it was really first $25,000 because it was to invest in someone else, and then $25,000 for myself to set up shop. That happened over a couple weeks period in September of 2015. And it was like the only sign of life that I had. that this was going to be something. And then, but of course, right after that happened, you're like, was that a fluke? Yeah. Is that just the only person? Because I can't really do anything if that's the only thing that happens, even though it's the major thing, the biggest thing that's happened to me. And then it really was, I know people want to hear that happened and then the money just all came at once. It was just easy from there. But what was easy was that I was no longer homeless because I could set up shop. I could get a place to stay. And I never looked back from there, which was wonderful. Like I wouldn't trade that for the world. But it was still really difficult to get the next investor and then the next one and then the next one. I think when I knew that this was like beyond a couple things that told me it was beyond like just my, just a few people that I knew was even before that first check in July, I think of 2015, a Medium article that I put out went viral and it kind of kicked things off. It was called Dear White Venture Capitalists. And it was like my whole thesis essentially. And the 8.5 year version ago version of me. And that overnight, literally overnight, so much happened when that went out, you know, viral, because I was talking about it out loud.
Yeah.
That was something where I knew, okay, there's something here because of all this feedback. But that, and then a couple of months later, that translated. And then the second one was when Stuart Butterfield reached out to me on Twitter, who the CEO, former founder, and CEO of Slack in 2016, I want to say. Yeah. I think I had maybe four or five investors at that time who put in 25K or so each, maybe a little bit more. And he reached out and just asked, how can I be helpful? I said, I can invest in my fund. But I still to this day, even though I've known him that long and we haven't talked in a while, but I still to this day don't know how he found me, what that was. And I remember this was a time where Slack was like,
it was definitely peak.
Yeah. And that's when I thought, oh, okay, there's momentum here. I started talking to people like Mark Andreessen, and I had been talking to Sam Altman prior to that. And there's these little touch points and then things snowballed.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a level of kind of persistence. Right. And I also think there's a level of relativity there, right? It's a big moment. Hey, I'm off the streets. And I'd also imagine that allows you to focus on different things because it's less about survival at that point. The closing questions, and I think for listeners specifically that are looking to take that step, right? One of the pieces that you talk about is power dynamics and where do you take money from? Would you have for folks that, you know, they might be in an industry where they're just, and they have an idea that, you know, they want to move forward with, or perhaps maybe they don't have the support system around them in terms of what we hear in the media. What would you think a good first step for folks that are looking to take that leap into their own ideas?
Yeah, I think standing out and really understanding why. I don't think that people should just quit their day job just because they have an idea or a passion or even a calling. There's so much in between that thing that catches you and being able to be sustainable there. So plotting out your plan, is this a 12-month plan? Is this an 18, 36-month plan? And really making a commitment to yourself that, yes, today you may not be able to do exactly what you want to do, but life is in your hands. Yeah. Your life is in your hands and you can do something about it. I think that's really important step to take. And because I talk to, I don't know how many hundreds of founders every week of varying degrees, some have just started out. A lot of them are in the game. So many people who have started out are just coming to me for money because they didn't plan.
Right.
They didn't research. They didn't do the thing. They thought you either leave your job or you do a side hustle and then somebody gives you money and then you can go out and you can have a chance at changing the world. And there's so much that you have to take ownership of before I think you should even be considering going out to outside funding. And then on top of that, even though I've invested in more than 200 companies, I'd much rather you generated revenue and thought about that first than any type of, oh, I should go out and raise money.
Right.
If you never raise money, I want to hear that story.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to put the cart before the horse in terms of getting money and then the idea comes after. And then on top of that, just having your house in order. I'm assuming that's what you're alluding to a degree.
Yeah. I think there's like a realism that I think serves us well. I'm a big believer in dreaming. I'm a big believer in moonshot ideas. I'm a living proof of that. Do things all the time that people don't understand the risk of. But I also calculate.
Right.
Or I calculate what risk I'm willing to take, and am I willing to take other people with me on that risk?
Yeah.
Sometimes I miscalculate, as unfortunately, but there's so many people who come to me and they're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't have any money. And I'm like, what about your job that you had? I left it because I need to go and start my own thing. And it's like, that's a you problem.
Just being real.
I'm just being real because we have so much agency of our own lives. And it's hard for me. Like, I care. I have empathy for people and I care about people and I am those people. Right. But I, because of the way that I built Backstage and because of the things I've been through, I know firsthand how much of our own power we have. Sure, things are happening to us. Sure, 100% the systems are built to be against us. Not even, not for us, but to be against us. But we are powerful.
Yeah.
And we can outsmart
them. Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah.
In numbers and in droves.
Arlen, we'll close on that note. That was really powerful. Again, thank you so much for hopping on the show, sharing a little bit about your journey, some insight into the book. And is there anything else that you want to plug before we close out?
I'll just say that if you want to be in LA April 9th through the 12th, come hang with me at Your First Million Live. It's a big event that I'm doing at LA Live, the Peacock Theater. Issa Rae, TLC, Sheila Johnson, Rich Paul, Gary Vaynerchuk, and more will be there. And it's Your First Million Live. It's the first of its kind. You can go to yourfirstmillion.live to check it out.
Sounds like an amazing event. I have to catch me a flight down there. It's not too far.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll be my guest.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Arlen. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. Ratings and reviews help this podcast tremendously. If you're enjoying what you're listening to, I'd love it if you could leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. I'll return the favor by giving you a shout out on the show and on Instagram. If you want to know a little bit of how that might sound, I've got a few to read out for you right now. Simina Love One says, great podcast, looking forward to more. And Blair with 9B says, a great podcast that provides insights from the industry. Really enjoy the episode so far, and the interview format creates both great dynamic and knowledge for each episode. I appreciate the love, and I can't wait to share more reviews on the upcoming episodes. Don't forget to submit yours today.